Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, August 22nd, 2013. Singer-songwriter Bruce Coburn's 40-year music career has touched many, those who listen to his music and those who have been influenced by it in their own careers, such as Steve Bell, Ally Matthews, and Glenn Soderholm. As well as being well-crafted, Coburn's music has exuded a spirituality which has been both clear and ambiguous at the same time. Brian J. Walsh, a chaplain and adjunct professor of theology of culture at Toronto's Wycliffe College, talks about this in his book, Kicking at the Darkness, Bruce Coburn and the Christian Imagination. Brian's on the phone with us tonight to talk about the book and his perspective on the spirituality found in Coburn's work. But before we do, let's listen to Starwheel from Bruce Coburn's Joy Will Find a Way album.
Orion's high in the southwest sky. You're bound to move on, and so am I. On this world we've had time to how come nobody ever seems to learn? See how the star wheel turns. Crystal drift on the whistling wind. Constant change is the space we're in. You may use a slide rule or a golden crown, but nothing's worth it that you can pin down. See how the stars.
And now to our interview with Brian Walsh. Good evening, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. When did your interest in Bruce Coburn's music begin?
Oh, probably when I was a teenager, or early 20s, back in the 70s. So early 70s, I think the first album I heard might have been the second or third. And the very first song I heard was... my goodness, why have I also forgotten that? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Oh, when you started listening to it, what sort of drew you and attracted you to his stuff?
Well, I think what attracted me to Coburn's music was both the profundity of the lyrics and how evocative the music was. Coburn is... an exceptional lyricist, and certainly one of the best guitar players in the world today, and mm-hmm. that was evident in his very earliest stuff. So it was that kind of thing that drew me in.
Well, I've interviewed a number of singer-songwriters over the last couple of years that Arts Connection's been on, and amazingly, there are so many singer-songwriters that have been influenced by Coburn, by his style, either as a musician or just how he's able to weave the word pictures with the lyrics that he does. Is that what sort of keeps you listening to Coburn, that whole element of and especially too, is you never sort of know where he's going next?
Well, there certainly is. You never know where he's going next, and that sometimes will put a fan off, that you think you understand this musician, you think you understand their sound, and then a new album comes out, and it takes you four or five listens to finally get into it. And that is something I have certainly appreciated about Coburn, that every new album seems to be that he's doing something different musically and also lyrically. But I think the other thing is that I think we find ourselves drawn to certain kinds of artists, especially if we're drawn to them in a profound way, because what they're dealing with in their art resonates so deeply with your own life. And I think that I'm not alone, especially with fans who have been listening to Bruce for 40 years or so, to say that, gee, it almost seems that every next step in his life seems to parallel our own.
Mm-hmm.
That we have this sense of being understood by this artist. And he's not trying to understand us. He's just trying to understand the world and understand himself. Yet he's living in the same world and struggling in ways that simply resonates with so many of us.
Now, is that sort of what led to kicking at the darkness, is trying to take that whole aspect of Coburn and how he sees the world and putting it in a form that we can understand?
Yes and no. I'm careful in the book to not try to presume too much that I'm helping other people to understand Bruce Coburn. Because I want the art to stand on its own, and so on one level I'm trying to make it accessible. Another level I'm trying to deepen the art, but I think most importantly, it's because I've experienced this resonance myself with Coburn's art, and it's been a dialogue partner for me in my own understanding of the world and indeed my own Christian theology. That I wanted to write a book that really was a book of theology, where the main contemporary dialogue partner, and theology must always have contemporary dialogue partners, the main partner was, in fact, this particular artist and his body of work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and looking at that, there's one thing that I found really really profound in it, and I remember listening to Coburn in the late 70s, early 1980s, when Dance in the Dragon's Jaws came out, and this whole thing about evangelical Christians took, you know, wondering where the lions are as his confession to be a Christian, and then, you know, 4 years later, Stealing Fire came out, and If I Had a Rocket Launcher, where he uses a profane phrase in there, and they just turned on it. You make it clear that it's not about defining whether or not Coburn's a Christian or where he falls in that Christian perspective. I just want to get this out of the way first. Why did you take that particular stance? Because there could be people looking at it and going, I wanted to find out where Coburn stands in his faith perspective. And to a degree, they're not going to get a definition out of that in the book.
No, they're not going to get that at all. I will resist that. Out of respect for the art and out of respect for the man himself. If people want a definition, and if evangelical-type folks want a definition, then the answer that Coburn will give unequivocally is that he is no evangelical Christian. He's just unequivocal about that. He reacts very strongly, and I share that reaction to so much of what he has seen in the political and social and economic world that evangelical Christianity inhabits. So he's not that. Yet I'm also, so I'm writing in a way which is inviting Christians to come more deeply into his art and into a process of reflecting theologically. But I'm also trying to write in such a way that Coburn fans who are not Christians will also find the dialogue itself interesting, even if they don't believe anything about Christian faith per se. So I want them to be able to come away from this book saying, well, that is a really interesting way to engage Coburn, and may have even helped them to understand certain dimensions of Coburn more deeply, or may have sparked their own imagination in terms of how they engage these songs and what the songs might mean.
Right. Well, I want to look at how you actually, you know, you work that through in one example, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Brian Walsh, and we're going to take a look at the spiritual perspectives that are found in Coburn's lyrics. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Lord of the starfields, Ancient of days, Universe maker, here's a song in your praise. Wings of the storm cloud, beginning and end, you make my heart leap like a banner in the wind. Oh, love that fires the sun, keep me burning. Sun, keep me burning. Lord of the star fields, sower of life, and earth are full of your light. Voice of the Nova, smile of the dew, all of our yearning only comes home to you. Oh, love that fires the sun, keep me burning.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Lord of the Starfields from Bruce Cockburn's In the Falling Dark album. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Brian Walsh. Brian, you look at in Kicking at the Darkness, you've got the song from in the Falling Dark. You've got the whole creation triptych, which is Starwheel from Joy Will Find a Way, Lord of the Starfields, Creation Dream from Dancing in the Dragon's Jaws. That's just an example of how you sort of pull all these insights together. Kind of walk us through, because you call that the creation triptych. Kind of walk us through how you went your process in all of this.
Yeah, happy to do that. It's interesting because I had, in fact, written a manuscript in the early 90s on Cockburn, which ended up getting abandoned for good reasons. But the only thing that was saved from that manuscript was this discussion of those three particular songs that somehow I thought, I think I've stumbled upon something here. So essentially, what I was looking at was, is there a creation spirituality in Bruce Cockburn, and can we find that in some of the early songs after his evolution into Christian faith? And that evolution is really marked by Sun, Salt, and Time, that album, and specifically All the Diamonds in the World. And I came upon these three songs that were about creation, Starwheel, Lord of the Starfields, and Creation Dream. And what I end up doing is I play with the imagery that we meet in these songs. So that the first song, Starwheel, see how the starwheel turns. So we have this sense of the artist, not unlike the psalmist way back in Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. The psalmist is looking at the constellations and looking at the stars, as some of us might have been doing recently with the Perseid meteor showers. And there is this experience that the contemporary psalmist has looking at these stars, where it seems that the universe is actually communicating something. As you watch the star wheels turn, as you watch the constellations, And what it comes right down to it is, we're given love, and love must be returned. That's all the bearings that you need to Star Wheel Turn. So that the artist perceives in this attention to creation that love is at the heart of the whole thing. And that is just such a profoundly biblical notion of the world, you know, replacing that modernist notion of cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, with sum amitas ergo sum, I am loved, therefore I am. That the reason there is anything is because of love, and that love goes all the way down. So that's the first song. And then in Lord of the Starfields, it is actually offered to us as a prayer, as a psalm. Here the artist actually self-consciously is identifying himself with a psalmic moment. And in that song, we meet these amazing lines, voice of the Nova, smile of the dew, all of our yearning only comes home to you. So again, he's looking at the stars. He's looking at the star field, Lord of the star field. He's singing to the Creator. And he says, voice of the Nova, that's the sort of the sense of the supernova, the Big Bang, the cataclysmic beginning of it all. So he's picking up from that scientific understanding. Voice of the Big Bang, which what could be louder than that? Smile of the dew, what could be gentler and more intimate than the dew that lies on the grass in the morning? So he identifies God in this way, and he says, all of our yearning only comes home to you. So now he's saying that the only way to be fundamentally at home in the world is through a relationship with this Lord of the Starfields. And then the final song, which I think really is one of my favorite songs by Bruce Colburn, Creation Dream. It is almost as if, well, actually, it isn't almost as if. Colburn is clearly listening and have been reading C.S. Lewis at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we have almost his musical rendition of what we meet in the very founding of Narnia in The Magician's Nephew, where Aslan sings creation into being. And that's exactly what we meet in the song Creation Dream, that the Creator sings the world into being and then makes us a step further and we hear him sing, you were dancing. The you is the Creator, is Christ. You were dancing, I saw you dancing, throwing your arms toward the sky, fingers opening like flares, stars were shooting everywhere. So now we move from creation by song to creation by dance, that the Creator dances creation into being, which is exactly really how we see creation responding in C.S. Lewis. So I find these just incredibly rich imageries, and I think that any deeply theologically shaped artistic vision has to have its foundation in such an understanding of creation. That the reason you become so attentive to creation and attentive to the world is because the world itself is revelatory. The world itself is eloquent. It speaks. It sings praise. And the artist, in one important respect, is joining in that song.
And I find that whole aspect, you know, fascinating as you're writing it. And there's so much more in there. You talk about windows as a theme within Coburn's, and you know, looking in and looking out, and what you can see and what you can't see. As you explored this whole spiritual side of Bruce Colburn's music, was there anything that sort of came as a surprise to you?
Not as I was writing, because I've lived with this music for all of its history, and so I've seen each step. And I don't think so. I think some folks were very surprised with the move towards the city. And in fact, there was a CBC documentary, radio documentary, that said the Inner City Front was sort of the pivotal album where there's this change, which I think was actually a superficial reading. There isn't a rural urban dichotomy in Coburn at all, as far as I can see. Mm-hmm. But rather, the pivotal album is the album before that, Humans. And really, what we have happening there is precisely because the artist embraces the world with such joy and with such attention, that when the world starts to fall apart, first his own personal world of his marriage, and then that opens his eyes to the brokenness of the world all around him. And before you know it, he's starting to write very urban-sounding and also very strongly political songs.
Mm-hmm.
Makes total sense.
And that's where some of his fans, his early fans, sort of started falling off, is because of that both lyrical and stylistic break from some of his earlier material.
That's right. And I think that the stylistic shift is important. You may be able to sing these three creation songs with wonderfully beautiful and evocative acoustic sounds, but if you're going to start singing about Guatemalan gunships shooting up refugee camps in southern Mexico, as he does in Rocket Launcher, then you probably need an electric guitar in your hand.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to talk about the lies of democracy, what's called democracy, really as a front for an oppressive capitalism, as he does in Call of Democracy, then you probably need a full band and again, an electric guitar with quite the wailing sound to it. These are the only appropriate voices. And I guess the thing is that, and if this was why it was so wise that Coburn, following his manager's advice, avoided the Christian music scene totally after his conversion.
Mm-hmm.
That would have so constricted him if he'd gone to that scene. So he just kept on doing his art with the integrity that he has, and some folks fall off, some folks join. But I would say that if Christians cannot handle facing the implications of an idolatrous economic system and the implications that has had for marginalized people around the world, then they ought not listen to Bruce Coburn, but they should probably stop reading the gospel too.
Well, excuse me. On that, I want to take one final break, and we'll be right back to wrap up our conversation with Brian J. Walsh, author of Kicking at the Darkness, Bruce Coburn and the Christian Imagination. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station. Arts Connection. You've been listening to Creation Dream from Dancing in the Dragon's Jaws album by Bruce Coburn. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to finish up our conversation with Brian Walsh. You were talking about just before we went, in terms of the shift in Coburn's style and music, and he went from, I don't ever think you're right, there wasn't an urban-rural split. He always looked at both aspects. But he certainly did start taking on social justice issues a lot more,
right?
With a lot more fervor than he had in prior albums. Have you had any feedback from Bruce Coburn himself on the book?
Yeah, I have. Bruce and I have not been friends or anything like that, and he's kind of been, I think, over the years bemused by what I've been doing. Every now and then I'd write a new article and show up backstage, and I'd hand him an envelope, and he'd say, "Oh, now I can see what I've been up to again." But he did respond to the book at one point, and he said that as he read it, he found himself deeply affected by the feeling of having been understood. then he said, doesn't happen every day. And there's nothing I could want more mm-hmm. than that, that he felt that he was understood. I then did do an hour-long on-stage interview with him at the Calvin College Festival of Faith and Writing. And that was good fun, because we could just sort of talk through some of his songs and my interpretations. And it was clear that he didn't necessarily agree with every one of my interpretations, but that didn't matter, because he puts his art out there
mm-hmm.
for others to do with what they will.
Yeah. What's been the overall feedback about the book?
Overall, I think has been quite positive. You know, there's always going to be a reviewer or two who are going to get their nose out of joint, thinking I've tried to put Coburn into some theological box, though I think I bend over backwards not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, the reviews have been very encouraging.
Great. If people are interested in learning more about Kicking at the Darkness or getting a copy, how can they do that?
Well, you can get the book from any bookstore if you order it. I'd encourage folks to order it from your local bookstore, not a big chain. I'd encourage you to not buy it from Amazon, but again, try to support a local bookstore and just have your local bookseller order some in.
Great. Brian, thanks very much for your time tonight.
You're most welcome.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thank you to my guest, Brian Walsh. And a quick program note, Arts Connection is moving to a new day and time. Beginning September 2nd, you can listen to Arts Connection every Monday from 9:30 to 10 p.m. If you miss us, then look for our archive programs on the website, salemministries.ca. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@salawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W, ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter @Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.